November 17, 2019. This is the Atheist Experience coming to you live from Austin, Texas at the Atheist Community of Austin's Free Thought Library. I'm your host, Matt Delaney. Joining me this week, Don Baker.
Hey, good to be here.
Woo.
Yay.
And you have a topic for us.
I do.
We'll talk about
souls one more time.
We're going to go back to the soul.
Yep.
Okay.
For the third time.
See, you're just trying to make me look bad because I'm on record as saying that the soul is the single most obviously dead topic in all of theology.
Yeah, I'm trying to expand that a little bit.
And now we're going back to beat the dead horse again.
Yes.
It'll be fun.
Okay.
Quick announcements and stuff to get out of the way before we get started. We, as I mentioned, are at the Atheist Community of Austin's Free Thought Library. There are actually people sitting on the other side of the glass here and some on the back porch and other stuff. If you are in the Austin area, ever. The building's open basically 7 days a week from 11 to 9. If you ever get here and the building's not open, there's a number you can call. It just means because we're an entirely volunteer-run organization, somebody's wires got crossed or somebody had to work or go to a job interview or stop out and skip out for lunch or whatever else. But by and large, we're here. And there's something going on many nights here, including there's a philosophy group that meets here on Wednesday. We record some of our many, many programs at different times during the week. This is Sunday, and so this is the day when most people are going to be here. Talk Heathen was on from 1 to 2:30. And then after Talk Heathen was over, they hung out in the Discord for a while. We're going to be doing the same thing. We're on from 4:30 till roughly 6 o'clock or so, and then we'll be hanging out in the Discord for a short period of time. That's the ACA fan Discord, and they will have the link up somewhere in that vicinity. Any atheist or atheist-friendly person is welcome to come down to the building and interact with us whenever the heck you want to. But on Sundays, after the Atheist Experience is over with, there's dinner here. And today it's going to be Chinese. It'll be in the back. It's free for everybody. But this place does actually run off of donations. I mean, yes, we have the Atheist Debates Patreon. We have people donating money in YouTube and ad revenue from all that. But if people are coming down for lunch, you're not required to pay, but we will accept donations for those people who are able to do it to help offset the cost for the people who aren't. Yesterday, the Atheist Community of Austin had an excursion to the Texas Renaissance Fair. And I had only been to the Sherwood Forest Fair, which is great and, you know, like 30 minutes outside of town. But this is over closer to Houston, so it's, you know, 2 hours and some change just to get there. It's also huge. Like, if anybody hasn't been, wear a jacket because it's getting colder. But I think you really need 2 days to see it properly.
You can camp there?
You can camp there, but we didn't get to see everything. We saw maybe 2/3 of it, and we weren't there. We were only there from like 10 to 5 or 10 to 5:30 or so. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot to see and do. It was a really good time. There were about 10 of us that went. We had a great time, and the AC is going to be doing more of these monthly events. Erin is now on the board and organizing events, so good job to her, and special thanks to Jim for not only dealing with the rental car place that got us the van that we used, but also driving us there and back. So greatly appreciate both of them doing all this work. But if you're worried, it's like, you know, hey, it's 20-some-odd bucks to get into the Ren Fair, and then everything there costs money, and of course things cost more money, and it's, you know, you want to throw knives, it's $4 and everything. Not everything that we do every month is going to be an expensive event. There are going to be free events and fun events and potlucks. We have the ACA's Friendsgiving, which is a version of Thanksgiving, come up on Thanksgiving Day here at the building. We'll also be doing Friendsmas, which is Christmas. Whoever named it just decided they didn't want to use Christmas.
It's not Festivus.
I use Christmas. Call it whatever the hell you want. I've already put up a video about secular Christmas and all that stuff and use the name. Somebody out there had asked me right before this started if I had any debates coming up. And while we don't have all the details yet, March 1st in New York City, I will be debating Dinesh D'Souza. This is the debate that was supposed to happen a year or so ago and didn't, but that is now back on track. And while there is no debate and we have not heard from the individual in question, we decided that since Kanye West is now a Christian and is now selling Christian products and has announced that he really wants to reach atheists, What better place, what better opportunity could Kanye possibly have to truly reach atheists than to either agree to do a public formal debate with me, perhaps at a university, perhaps we could, you know, fill out Madison Square Garden or something like that, because he's got just massive
fans.
He's
got connections, right.
but also, he's welcome to call into the show if he'd like to explain what he's doing and have a discussion about that. I would even set up a special show where we completely, like, cancel whoever's supposed to be co-hosting, just have Kanye sit right here where Don is. We don't even necessarily have to take calls. We could just have a conversation here live. Now, obviously, for security reasons, we would never be able to tell you when Kanye was going to be on, because we have a small building and he has massive fans, and, you know, we wouldn't want to have everybody in Austin trying to get in here. So what we would do is we would say that we were doing a regular show, and then we would cut to me like we are right now. And then while we were on me, we would have Don get up and move out of the building.
Right.
And then we would have Now, why did you do that? Why did you cut back before I was ready? Oh, you are so in trouble.
You want to watch me cry.
But that is what we would have to do. And I was going to point out that Kanye was in Houston, and that Houston's only a couple hours. And I was in Houston for the Texas Renaissance Fair. I had it all built up. But yes, no, it's just Don. But Kanye, if you want to,
I'd gladly yield to him so that you could have a show with him.
If you really want to have, you know, if you really want to reach atheists, this would be the place to do it. The number one live atheist call-in show on the planet.
And that goes for God, too. He can call in.
God can, yeah.
He can make an appearance. So I'll yield for God, too.
I would bump a co-host for Kanye or God. I'm not sure if I'd bump Kanye for God, because I think the Kanye thing would be more entertaining. Because if God shows up, well, we're kind of just done.
Right.
I mean, as soon as he demonstrates he's actually God, it's a short show. But if God's here, God could bring Kanye in.
There you go.
And then, you know, I'm just, boom, Kanye's right here. And he can just look at me and say, I was right.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, nothing official yet. But I am serious that if Kanye or anybody else, I mean, any of these celebrity Christians, get the woman who's Trump's religious advisor, who loves to talk about her shoes and stuff, rather than Jesus, or get one of those prosperity gospel jackasses to call in and we can have a conversation about that. In any case, this is the Atheist Experience. We're going to be taking live calls right after Don's done with his presentation on Go Soul. If you are an atheist, you probably don't want to call in. The lines are full right now and we tend to prioritize theists. But in addition to the fact that I now live in a world where there may be more people who believe the earth is flat than there are who will self-identify as an atheist.
That's sad.
It's also worth noting that there are more and more people who seem to be toying with this conspiracy that our callers are like paid actors that we give a script to. That tells you what. It actually says more about what you think about me and us, that we would spend all these years doing something.
Right. Yeah, if you don't think our callers are giving Christianity a fair shake, call in.
Yeah.
You know, please do it yourself.
For years, every time we'd get an email and somebody's like, why do you only let the stupid Christians call in? I'm like, call me.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, if you're too scared to do it, get your pastor to call.
That's right.
We'll take them. But right
the
now, the lines are full.
Scariest calls have been from pastors.
Yes, they have. Yeah. But in any case, that's what's going on at the ACA. And now I'm going to turn it over to Don for Go Soul.
Go Soul. Well, this is my third run at the soul topic. This is failure number 69, if you're keeping track.
Ooh. Is it going to be dirty?
No.
See, only one of us thinks in those
terms. Will be mentioned, but not 69. all right. The concept of a soul is nonsensical at best. And previously I've talked about ensoulment and how that could not be made to make sense. And I've also talked about how the soul is a basis of a money-making scam used by religions. Today I want to talk about the crazy ideas about what happens to your soul after you die. So this is where your soul goes. That's why it's Go Soul. In 1901, Duncan MacDougall conducted an experiment which he made weight measurements of patients as they died. He claimed that there was a weight loss of varying amounts at the time of death. He concluded that the soul weighed 21 grams.
Yeah. There's even a movie called 21 Grams based.
Is there?
Yes.
I'll be darned. Okay. This has been debunked since as you know, junk. But it's pretty fun, right? And you know, if the soul were material and weighed 21 grams, it would sort of upend all the religious ideas of it being ethereal and woo-woo-y, right? Well, after your death, after you die, you're either going to be a bodily resurrection or a spiritual resurrection, possibly both. The bodily resurrection, you'll be living with the kingdom of God on earth, and imagine billions of unimplanted embryos and miscarriages rotting on the ground, because they'll be brought right back and sitting there, you know. And most people who maybe die in old age don't want to have an 80-year-old body for all eternity. So there's that problem.
So the theologians, which is a fancy word for people who just make shit up,
right,
have been asked questions about this stuff forever. Like, when I go to heaven, what will I be like? And the general consensus among supposedly scholarly theologians is that, well, of course you will have an ideal body. So it doesn't matter, the fetus, the 90-year-old, the person who lost a limb or whatever, all of them will have perfect bodies, which means nobody will be recognizable.
Right. That's right. Sign me up for that.
You get to heaven, you're like, Mom, why do you look so hot?
Right. Okay, if you have a spiritual resurrection, your first stop is purgatory, where you'll be cleansed of your sins. But Christians are not sure whether there's a purgatory or not.
And actually, Christians are. It's Catholics are the only ones with purgatory.
Oh, okay.
Purgatory doesn't exist outside of Catholicism and maybe Orthodox.
And that seemed to be a little bit of a scam in that they made the barrier to heaven so steep, everybody was probably saying, well, screw that. I'm gonna live it up here because I'll never get into that place. So they had to you know have a loophole to get you in somehow. Okay, you might go to the bad place. Well, God has lots of torments for you if you don't obey and atone for your sins. And even if you're a saint, you're born with original sin and you immediately owe a debt to God.
Yeah, and saints is another Catholic thing. You live with a Catholic far too long.
Yeah, maybe so. If you want to pay your debt, the church will accept cash, checks, or credit cards as payment, and as an added bonus, they're tax deductible. You might be exposed to a lake of fire, fire and brimstone burning, or being hung by your tongue, according to the Apocalypse of Peter.
Mm-hmm.
All bodily torments. So do ethereal souls have bodies? That's a good question. We don't think so. You might just be annihilated or separated from God, which sounds like what really happens. You just stop existing. Of course, God never existed to begin with, so you're separated from God already.
The annihilation theory, this is actually really interesting.
Yeah.
Because, so the fire and brimstone, you know, we're going to look at the Bible and talk about hell. The Bible's not really clear on hell. Now, the Old Testament, you know, the Jewish Bible and stuff, the very notion of an afterlife isn't particularly clear. And it's described as, you know, sleeping with
your
fathers, et cetera. And so that lends some credibility to the notion that, you know, maybe there's nothing. Because Jews aren't promised some sort of spiritual or bodily afterlife or anything else. That's just why they're focused more on the here and now. But when you get to the New Testament, you have various different passages that are used to reference hell that have different sources. I did a lecture on this for the ACA years ago on the history of hell.
Mm-hmm.
But most of what we know or what we think we know about hell doesn't come from the Bible. It comes from the Apocalypse of Peter, which you mentioned, which is also the source material for Dante's Inferno. And so there's this pop culture thing from a book that was considered inspired scripture but did not make the cut for the Bible. And once Revelation makes the cut, you start wondering why anything else didn't. Because, I mean, that's...
It was crazy, crazy stuff, right?
Yeah, that's another level. But this notion that you'd have to have a physical body to torment is potentially wrong because God's making the rules. And so if you could make a ghost feel and experience certain things as if it were like a body, then okay. As soon as you add magic man who can do anything into it, all these things essentially become possible. But
I guess
annihilation, the annihilation theory enters in it in a number of different ways. There are modern Christians who believe that if you are not a believer in God, that eternal separation from God is what is described in the Bible, and that one of the possibilities of that is you'll be eternally separated in hell. And the other possibility is that you'll be eternally separated by being annihilated, that you will just cease to exist. And there's an interesting philosophical argument for that annihilation theory, because if God is everywhere and everything, then you must therefore be nothing and nowhere, and therefore annihilation theory is the best model. Now, the funny thing for me is that Fred Phelps, the former leader of Westboro Baptist Church, who believed in a literal hell, went to seminary with Billy Graham, who advocated for a version of annihilation theory, or at least at one point did. Mm-hmm. And so here's these two guys who went to the same seminary, and one of them became one of the most beloved preachers on the planet, who was still awful, by the way. He still had a lot of awful doctrine.
Oh, yeah,
but he wasn't Falwell, and he certainly wasn't Fred Phelps. And then Fred became a civil rights lawyer, but he had these very particular views. And so this is why I don't sum up the entirety of someone's character as saying, oh, this person's good or this person's evil.
Yeah.
And instead it's about what they do. Because you could say Billy Graham impacted millions of people with an absolute garbage dogma that they dedicated their life to. But he just didn't necessarily think you were going to actually, you know, be hung by your tongue or burned.
And I understand that Fred Phelps did some good stuff.
Phelps helped end Jim Crow laws in Kansas. And runs a tiny little church that's just his family, and basically they're a bunch of loud-mouthed people.
He's died, though.
Oh, he's dead.
Yeah. Okay.
But annihilation theory is something that I actually find interesting. Because that model – see, one of the things about religions, and Christianity in particular, is that through the process of studying this, they build up more and more defense mechanisms to make their belief – less falsifiable. Anything in their belief that might be falsifiable needs to be closed up, because then you can show that it's not true.
Yep.
And so as soon as you enter annihilation theory as a possibility, you've now made something that's even less falsifiable. Because if I'm an atheist, you don't get to tell me, you'll find out when you're dead, because I won't. If I'm just annihilated when I'm dead and you go to heaven, then you will have been right the whole time and you will never have the smug satisfaction of letting me know.
We're getting to that too.
I jumped in on Don's thing.
That's fine. You might end up going to the good place instead.
That's a good show.
Well, okay. Well, what will you do in heaven? Well, maybe you'll bask in the glory of God and praise him. According to the Apocalypse of Peter,
God, sounds tedious.
Everyone sings in choral prayer. Oh boy, why would you need to pray?
Oh Lord, ooh, you are
so big. You might be singing
the
praises of God for all eternity. Now recall that he is infinitely narcissistic and needs to be constantly reminded of his greatness. So that's what you'll be doing for all eternity. You might be fluttering around with wings and playing spiritual harps. I don't know. All these things that you see are just utterly ridiculous. Well, who will you interact with in your afterlife? Well, maybe you'll reunite with grandma, or maybe you can listen to billions of stories about how the life experiences of embryos that didn't implant. And they'll be a little repetitive. You can hear them over and over again, because that's all they'll know to say. You can meet Martin Luther and Hitler and many popes who orchestrated murders. You can suffer the self-righteous piety of saints and other miserable Christians the whole time. I want to go to the other place. Yeah. Here's a choice one. Here's something about what you'll be doing. The happiness of the elect in heaven will in part consist in watching the torments of the damned in hell. And among these may be their own children, parents, husbands, wives, and friends on earth. One part of the business of the blessed is to celebrate the doctrine of reprobation. While this decree of reprobation is eternally executing on their vessels of wrath, the smoke of their torments will be eternally ascending in view of the vessels of mercy, who, instead of taking part in those miserable objects, will sing, Amen, Hallelujah, Praise the Lord. This is from Nathaniel Edmonds.
Yep.
It's one of my favorite quotes. He was a pastor in the 1700s. You could be having sex in the afterlife. There's our 69.
If you're not, it's, yeah. I mean, no offense to anybody who doesn't care for sex or anybody who's asexual or whatever else, but by and large, if you're going to have an afterlife and you've created people who like to have sex, they should at least have the opportunity to have sex.
Right. Well, C.S. Lewis claimed that it would be a miracle that you would have either a spiritual penis or spiritual vagina and be able to enjoy having sex for all eternity. And he called this transsex.
All right.
And if you're interested in that, there's actually an article on the ACA website in the resources, online articles about C.S. Lewis, and you can find the whole chapter that this is mentioned. So no one can accuse me of quote mining, but his whole chapter's in there. Don't forget that if you are a martyr for Islam, you get the 72 regenerating virgins and serving boys to molest and rape over and over again for all eternity. I think even that would get tiresome, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
after a billion years or so.
Yeah. I would imagine after like an hour or two, I'm probably just going to have the serving boys take over for a while I recover.
Right. I thought you were supposed to rape the serving boys, but okay. I call this whole idea as a perpetual orgasm in outer space to kind of denigrate it. And remember that one person's theology, like C.S. Lewis's, is just as good as anybody else's, since there's no rational or factual basis for theology. Another thing that might entertain you in the afterlife, in heaven, is the second coming. You'll get a front row seat for Judgment Day, and you'll get to watch the Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers, and they will throw them into the furnace of fire where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This is Matthew 13:40 or so. And you can even have transsex while you're doing this. So isn't that awesome? It's kind of like snuff porn. Okay.
That's assuming you get to heaven before the second coming.
Right.
If you get there afterwards, maybe they'll play a rerun.
Right. Or maybe you'll hear stories from everybody that's there.
You should have been here a month ago.
Been here, right?
Holy crap. I was sitting there and I had my servant boys all around me. And we just watched all this wailing and gnashing of teeth. And I just was like in a perpetual state of orgasm. It was like, I realize every day up here is as wonderful as it could possibly be, but if it was possible for that there was a more wonderful day, that was the day that was more wonderful, yeah.
Right.
God, I wish I could go back to... Oh, wait, I can. That's one of the nice things. I could just relive that same day over and over.
Kind of like Groundhog Day in heaven, huh? Yeah. Okay, well, the sad fact is that this is all just a fantasy. There's no God in the real world, and there was no part of you that is going to the fantasy world when you die, so... Never the two shall meet. The concept of a soul is just malicious bullshit used to manipulate people and give them false hopes and evil whack-off fantasies, and that's just another failure of Christianity.
I would largely agree. Hooray. Okay.
All right, let's get to calls.
Yeah. So there was a caller that I had moved up to the front of the queue who evidently hung up before we got around there. It was a Catholic caller who had some interesting thoughts about God and proving God and stuff. And I was looking forward to that. But we have Brian in Ohio who says that he has proof that God exists. So hi, Brian, you're on with Don and Matt.
Hi, Matt. Hi, Don.
Hi.
How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call.
So your proof that God exists, it says here, is Tim Tebow?
Tim Tebow. He's the proof right there.
Is he God or is he...
How is Tim Tebow proof that God exists?
He's not God, of course, but he, you know, represents God. He's a huge cheerleader for God here.
I don't believe, I'm Brian, I apologize. I know we just had some fun with the soul, but I'm actually serious. Are you at all suggesting that Tim Tebow is evidence or proof of God?
What happened is Tebow's playoff game in 2012 when the Broncos beat the Steelers. Did you guys hear about this when all the stats lined up?
I'm pretty sure, but I don't pay attention to shit from 7 years ago. Do you have proof of God or not?
Yeah, it was a miracle that God did to make all the stats line up to 316 3 years after Tim Tebow wore 316 on his eye black during the Florida Gators national championship in 2009.
Are you being serious? You let me know when you're being serious, because I'm not going to address that.
I've chatted with some guys who are big into sports stats, and they can quote you numbers all day long.
You're dead serious that it was a miracle?
I'm dead serious.
I think it'd be a miracle if 316 didn't show up somewhere.
Did you say you
have an atheist friend who totally doesn't believe this is true, and he's the one who actually had me call the show because I mean, he
because
he
thinks you're because he thinks this is the stupidest thing he's heard. That's why he had you call the show.
Well, I mean, it's
because
crazy.
No, stop. You don't understand how statistics work. As Don pointed out, it would be far more miraculous that things like this didn't happen than that they did. But let's assume for a second that everything that you're going to tell me about Tim Tebow and the stats and how it all lines up and everything else is completely true. I'll just grant you that's the case. How did you determine that it was a miracle, and how did you determine that God is responsible for that?
Well, I mean, it's 3:16. It's John 3:16. So
No. Stop. Stats don't come out to John 3:16. You're already interpreting something. But even if it came out that it was related to John 3:16, how did you determine it's a miracle, and how did you determine that God is responsible for that miracle?
Yeah, it's just too much of a coincidence.
That's
for me
not
to
an
not
argument,
believe.
And that's not evidence. Saying it's just not believable that I'm not right. That's what you're saying. And so we'll move on to somebody else who might have something serious or real. Because pointing out that something seems extraordinary is easy. There are lots of things that seem extraordinary. And as Don pointed out, if we didn't see extraordinary things, that would be extraordinary in and of itself. But the fact of the matter is, you can't demonstrate that this was miraculous, especially when we're talking about statistics in a sport where virtually every number is going to come up. What you're doing is you're looking at something, you're seeing, oh, it's 3:16. Hey, that reminds me of John 3:16. And how it's incredibly unlikely that this would actually happen. You know what would be a miracle is if Tim Tebow was still fucking relevant 7 years later. That would be a miracle.
That's right.
But he's not.
If he's playing football in his 90s, then we'll talk.
Charles in Corpus Christi, you're on with Don and Matt. What's up?
Good afternoon, Mr. Dillahunty.
And Mr.
Thank
Baker.
You for letting me talk on your show.
And Mr. Baker.
I have some very important information
I bet
I would
you
like
don't.
To pass down to you and your listeners.
Okay.
The Bolshevik Revolution, the Holocaust, the wars in El Salvador and Nicaragua, the assassinations of Abraham Lincoln and John Kennedy.
What about them?
The orders for these events
came from the Illuminati,
from the Jesuit order in Rome.
Okay, bye. He's clearly not listening. Wouldn't even accept that Don was in the room. Let's get some other theists back on here as well. But we have Joel in Alabama. You're on with Don and Matt.
Hello, Don and Matt. Hello. I have an argument for recurrent reincarnation. I do not believe that a soul goes from one body to a fetus, and I don't believe in the soul per se. I believe in awareness. I do believe...
Can awareness exist without a brain?
No. But I do believe in kind of an oversoul because I've experienced synchronicity. But that's not relevant because I believe that when you die, you're at least temporarily annihilated. Okay, so what I believe is that...
Whoa. What is temporary annihilation? If you're annihilated, you're annihilated.
Yeah, if your brain's dead, what's going to?
So you
come
don't
of
think that?
That
awareness? You don't think that awareness can exist without a brain? And when your brain dies, that awareness ceases to exist. So therefore,
I believe it's recurrent. I believe it's recurrent.
Therefore, you can't make an argument for reincarnation.
Yes, let me explain this to you. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And then explain why it's true.
And explain how you're violating the laws of non-contradiction, excluded middle, and identity, and not having to account for that.
After I die, the most basic awareness which I experience will begin to exist in an unborn baby.
No, okay? Whoa.
This is just a wild claim.
So first of all, you acknowledge that awareness is annihilated when your brain dies, and now you're just making a bald assertion that when you die, your awareness will be reborn in a new baby.
No, because it's universal awareness.
Look, okay? You throw as many words out as you want, but it's a bald assertion. What is your justification for thinking this?
Okay, because every baby has universal instincts and the desire to fulfill that instincts, which indicates universal awareness, which is recurrent.
No. Do you have any kids?
No.
Yeah. Go talk to people who've actually had kids, because kids have to be taught and learned. To the extent that they may have instincts, even if they're genetically programmed instincts, like the instinct to suckle, et cetera, that does not in any way relate to the type of thing that you're trying to describe as universal awareness. And even even to whatever extent it might, you have no evidence that your awareness, which you think ceases to exist when you die, is reborn in somebody else. Because the fact, even if we were all born with some minimal awareness, even if universal awareness was the same thing, that doesn't mean that you are reincarnated. It just means another fucking human.
No, I'm not talking about the recurrence of identity. I'm talking about the recurrence of my experience of awareness.
See, this is the problem. You say it's not identity, and then you say my experience of awareness. It's not your experience of awareness. It's that baby's experience of awareness. You don't get to call it yours, is what I'm saying, because that is a matter of identity.
That's just a pronoun.
Pronouns are used to take the place of a noun, but you are taking the place of somebody who might have something more important to say. All right, we've got Patrick in Florida. You're on with Don and Matt.
Hi, Matt. How are you doing today?
I'm irritated.
Yeah, you seem pretty short with people.
I'll let Don be shorter.
Get into the topic of how do atheists... Do you assert no science evidence of God? Because I was just curious
We don't believe in gods because there's insufficient evidence for a God.
Okay.
But also, I would say, I would also say that, often quite times when people say, oh, there's no evidence for God. And then people say, well, what about anecdotal evidence or this? And so then we would say there's no good evidence for God. But your question is, would I say that there's no scientific evidence for God? Yes.
You would?
Yes.
And what would you consider evidence? You know, how do we evidence God?
It depends on what the God claim is.
How would we evidence that the sky is blue?
Okay, well, my God claim is the universe equals God.
Then I don't care about it.
You don't care about it, but you'll debate.
Yeah, you're equivocating.
Give me a little leeway here.
You're equivocating words that have different meanings.
You know, if somebody called in and said, this can is what I call my God, I wouldn't care about it. Because calling something God doesn't mean it's a God. Calling the universe, we already have a word for the universe. It's universe. Why would you, what extra properties do you think the universe has? And how did you detect them?
Is a duck. I mean, but it.
A duck is a duck.
To say, Kaku highlighted this. He said that we must make the distinction. There's a natural God in the universe that Einstein spoke of.
No.
And there's a supernatural God that you're talking about with Christianity.
Einstein was. No, stop, 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 stop. Einstein was talking about Spinoza's God. It's a metaphorical God. It is talking about the laws that govern the universe could be metaphorically viewed as a God because it is the governor. It takes the place of the fictional one. I only care about people who are making claims about an actual God, not people who are trying to redefine the universe as God.
Well, we're studying the universe with science.
Yes.
It may be evidence to have what I would call or attribute to it God properties, such as consciousness.
You have no evidence for that.
OR theory. Do you know about OR theory of Roger Penrose?
No, but I have somebody sitting here who studied under Penrose's father and is friends with Penrose.
Oh, cool. Okay, well, perhaps he knows of the OR theory, and I'd like, you know, to see what he thinks about that, because that seems...
Come on down and have dinner with us. You can chat with this guy.
What identifiable properties does the universe have that justify attributing the God label to it?
Okay, I'm glad you asked that.
I asked it 5 minutes ago. Well, not that long, but go ahead.
Okay, well, religion or Christianity specifically describes God as without beginning or end, does it not? Hello?
I didn't feel that deserved a response because I asked for what properties of the universe...
I'm trying to get into. So the universe, the cyclical universe model of science...
There's all sorts of models.
An infinite universe. So you can
kind of rummage through the right bin there and find whatever you want, right?
No. What I'm asking is what properties, scientifically identifiable properties of the universe, justify putting the God label on it, and you go to without beginning and without end. But that's not a property that is necessarily distinct in a God.
Does God suffer heat death?
Creates on the grandest scale, and so does God.
Oh my God! Put down the bong. Put down the bong and listen to me. If I were to say this bottle, this can of Coke is God, and someone were to ask me what scientific properties, or let's say worse, I said this can of Coke is my dad. And they would say, what scientific properties does it have that makes it justified in calling it dad? And I said, well, it came into being at some time and it's made out of particles and it obeys laws of physics and gravity. That is not in any way showing that it's worthy of the label of dad. So saying that.
Certainly not. I agree with that. You know, and
okay, so give me a better case for
Christian perspective. I would be considered an atheist, so I agree with probably 90% of what you say. Separation of church and state.
Well, then you're 90% correct.
Soul, etc. But you say, why call the universe God?
Yes.
I say, why call the universe the universe? We create.
Next.
Sorry.
Hey, why should we call the universe God? Well, why should we call it universe?
Call everything God.
I'm not arguing about the label. I'm arguing about the package. And so when somebody says, here's the universe and all of its properties, but I'd like to call the universe God because over here, these people have an idea of God and it has these properties. I want to know which of those properties in the God traditional package make it justified to call the universe God. That's it.
You know, if there's a theme to this show, it seems to be that people want to bend over backwards to rescue the concept of God somehow, you know, and rehabilitate it and try to fix it. And it's like, give it up. Throw it away. It's not useful.
I'm going to call my parrot God. Why? What properties does your parrot have that God has? Well, he's sentient. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Well, he thinks and he can mimic actions. He's an agent. My parrot has agency and God has agency. Therefore, I can call my parrot God. Well, you can, but you're going to look ridiculous and we're not going to waste any time on it. Paul in London, as a reminder, you're going to be on the show here in just a second, Paul, with Don and Matt. As a reminder, next month, the weekend of December 12th to 17th, or across that time period, I will be in the UK. I'll be on the 14th. I'll be at the Cambridge Skeptic Society's 10th anniversary party, along with, I think, Richard Wiseman and maybe Simon Singh and some others. And on the 16th, I'm in Glasgow. But today we've got Paul from London who's on with Don and Matt.
Greetings, Don and Matt. How are you?
Hi.
Doing well.
Okay. I'm calling because I think I can prove that God does not exist.
Which God?
Well, all of them.
All of them? Even gods you haven't been presented with yet?
What about the God hiding under a rock on the other side of the universe?
Well, you see, in order for there to be belief in some kind of supernatural being, the supernatural being must have an agency in the beginning of life.
No. No, you just said in order for there to be belief, the supernatural agent must have agency in the beginning of life. I can believe things. I can believe things whether they're true or not. No, I'm saying you said, Paul, in order for there to be a belief.
Yeah.
So reword it.
Okay. Most religions have a component whereby their God creates the world, creates the universe, and creates life, right?
Not necessarily. I don't know what the justification is for saying most, but if you say you can disprove all gods, why did we go from all to most?
Let's just pick Christianity, and then you'll see that you could extend this to any religion you want.
Well, no. Okay. Well, I'm happy, Paul, for us to pick Christianity. Now, which version of Christianity?
We're getting off track here.
Yes, we are. And I'm doing it for a reason, because I'm happy to point out to all the people who think that Matt's just in a mood that I'm willing to call out shit arguments no matter whether they're for or against a God. So if we're going to be sloppy and say we can disprove all gods when we don't know, they're not all the same, they don't all share the same properties, and we haven't even presented with all of them, I just want to find out what God we're presenting. And if the closest you can get is Christianity, when there's over 1,000 denominations of Christianity, even more.
30,000.
And they have different definitions of what God is. I'm pointing out that what you're trying to do from the start is flawed, but now I'll let you get to it.
Okay. The beginning of the rocky planets, they ended up being extremely hot. They were all sterilized because of the heat, obviously.
What are you talking about? The beginning of what?
When the Earth was created, from the accretion of all the dust and particles that were circling the sun at the beginning of the Earth's structure. It was obviously very hot because all the kinetic energy to form the Earth raised its temperature. So we had a sterilized spherical rock, which was the beginning of the Earth.
If you believe science, that might be accurate.
Yeah.
Yes, I do believe science.
Well, the Christians don't. But also, you can't get from a sterile rock to, therefore, God doesn't exist.
I think I can, if you just bear with me.
Okay, but I think that, you know, I'm putting my Christian hat on as well. And so if you start with a sterile rock, you can't get from sterile rock to, therefore, life evolves.
Yes, you can, if you just let me do it.
If you can get from a sterile rock to life evolves, then you can get from a sterile rock to God-created life.
Will you just let me continue?
Maybe.
All right. There was a period where liquid water, the temperature of the Earth was such that liquid water could exist on the Earth. So what we had at the very beginning is we had chemistry. Now, because we don't really know what the composite materials were for the first chemical reactions, but what we do know is that there are chemical reactions that not only go in one direction, but they reverse themselves and go in the other direction, which is like the starting point of a replicator.
How do you know that God didn't interfere in this chemical
process?
Let's
assume that we're scientifically literate here, and you can cut to the chase and give the punchline here instead of the science lesson.
In the beginning, there was a replication process. I believe that this process started chemically. But when the chemistry replicators were able to make very crude copies of themselves, and you might want to say, okay, well, maybe...
Right, so abiogenesis giving us replicating molecules, giving us the evolution
meanwhile,
of life. Okay.
Meanwhile, what you believe is irrelevant, and there's no way you can rule God out of this process. But keep going.
Yeah, let's get to God.
So yeah, you're supposed to be disproving God.
In order for evolution to be true, there must have been the first replicator, a replicating mechanism, because you can't make copies unless there's a replicating mechanism somewhere. Right. So I'm saying that because the Earth was sterile, the only reactions that were possible were chemical reactions.
Okay. Can God do chemical reactions?
Let me just continue.
No, stop. Because this is a monumental waste of time, and you won't actually acknowledge this. It doesn't matter. So you're describing what you believe to have happened about abiogenesis, which, by the way, isn't an argument and a disproof of anything because you're telling us what you believe. Then we're going to talk about all the little nitpicky things about science. How do you prove that God did not intervene in what is otherwise a normal naturalistic process?
Because if he did, and the process of evolution still functions, then God is completely irrelevant.
No. That is not an argument that something didn't intervene. And even if God didn't intervene in evolution, you haven't proved that God doesn't exist. You are claiming to falsify the unfalsifiable, which is why this is a big waste of time.
When I spoke to your screener, I said I need to qualify that it's not possible to say that a God does not exist, as it's also not possible to say that a God does exist.
Well, it says here that you say you can prove that all religions are wrong, and I asked you about it at the top of a call, and you said that you could prove that no gods exist.
All the religions that I've come across all state that their God made humans, made the animals, made all the...
And you can't prove that that didn't happen.
Okay. I'm saying that through a replication process, through natural selection,
there's no necessary reason to say that God was involved.
No, I know there isn't.
I know, but that's not proof that there isn't a God, and it's not proof that God didn't intervene. The fact that God is unnecessary, God's not necessary to find car keys, but you can't prove that he didn't find mine. Laugh all you want. This is important. Shit arguments are shit arguments. Do not run around, atheists, and say that you can disprove God and you can disprove all gods, because then you're claiming to falsify the unfalsifiable. There is a reason why we sit here and talk about, tell us what you believe and why. There's a reason why I say I'm not necessarily convinced that there are no gods, but I am not convinced that there is a God. And if you have a very specific definition of a God and you can show that it is contradicted by actual facts, then yes, that God, as defined, definitely does not exist, or our understanding of the facts are wrong. But when you go around making these grandiose claims, there's a reason I'm not a mythicist. The mythicists are the people that are convinced that Jesus never existed, that it's all a myth. I don't know how you can demonstrate that. I think you can make a good case for it, but I don't know how you can demonstrate it even to a reasonable confidence, let alone to something close to a certainty. The second you make a claim, proclaiming that you can prove or disprove something, you have adopted a burden of proof. And if you've adopted a burden of proof where you're claiming to be able to falsify the unfalsifiable, you are now not worth listening to. And what you're doing is a disservice to everybody. Because the burden of proof should be on the theists who are claiming that their God does exist, that he was necessary for evolution, that he was necessary for life to begin from a sterile planet and all this. They need to demonstrate that. As soon as you claim that you can prove it's false, when you fucking can't, You have alleviated them of their burden of proof, and now you've added nothing but confusion to the conversation. Leave the burden of proof where it should be.
Amen, Matt.
Word. So now we got Jonathan in Arizona. You're on with Don and Matt.
Hi, guys. I had to laugh when you said a shit argument is a shit argument, because coincidentally I called in because I think, Matt, you might have used a shit argument in the past, but I'm sure you'll explain why I'm wrong.
It's entirely possible that I have.
Yeah, and real quick also, I'm glad Don is on. I've been wanting to tell Don for years. I think you have the most hysterical laugh on the planet. It always makes me laugh when I hear you laugh.
Well, good. That'll make up for one or two people that think it's horrible.
He might laugh at you in just a minute. What's up?
Yeah, I hope so. So
what's my shit argument?
I don't know. We'll find out.
Already there, you are.
Thank you. So in the past, and I want to make sure that this is actually still the case, because if not, then I'm wasting all of our time. On several episodes, you said that saying alien abduction is more like plausible because it doesn't require supernatural explanation.
Yeah, if you make a list of the things that would be required for an alien abduction scenario, what you need are everything is natural about that. And the only kind of implausible things are that, one, alien life would have the technological possibility to arrive at Earth or some reason to pick Earth out from all the others, the problems with traveling those distances. But none of those things violate the laws of nature or require any supernatural explanation. A God, on the other hand, absolutely violates all that and requires a supernatural explanation. So just by Occam's razor, when you start talking about listing the properties and how plausible they are, you reach a line where now we've crossed over into the realm of the supernatural, something for which we have no demonstration that it exists or could exist. And so the probability of supernatural is something you can't calculate. But the plausibility is something you can approximate, because out of all the times we've achieved and understood an explanation for something, zero of them have been confirmed to be supernatural.
Okay, and I agree with a lot of that. I wrote this out, and it's not much. It's just so I could remember it. So I'll respond to what you just said, and then you could give me your feedback on where I'm going wrong, if I'm going wrong somewhere. So saying that alien abduction doesn't require a supernatural cause, it presupposes that life has and can originate from non-life, which to my knowledge has never been demonstrated or confirmed here on Earth, let alone anywhere else.
Okay, stop.
That doesn't mean...
Stop.
Oh, go ahead.
So first of all, I'm talking about the process by which aliens would arrive on Earth. Now, if you want, by drilling back to where did alien life come from, you still don't get to assert that a supernatural explanation is any more plausible, because what we know is that life exists, the building blocks of life do exist throughout the universe. We've identified them on asteroids, interstellar bodies, and things like that. And so you don't get to dismiss the plausibility of aliens by saying, oh, we don't know where they came from either. Because if the answer to what is the origin of life is natural, then I'm right. If the answer to the origin of life... If the answer to the origin of life is supernatural, that's something you would need to prove before you could ever use it to say that this is actually more implausible. Because what you're doing then is just saying that your supernatural explanation is more plausible because you're also going to use it as an explanation for that alien life. And yet none of those are demonstrably true. So you're basically, oh, I'd like to justify this fiction as being more plausible by also saying that it's responsible for this thing over here. Until you demonstrate it, you don't get to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with that, and I'm not I'm not trying to make a case for a supernatural cause of life. I'm just saying, isn't it, if we don't know that life has a natural cause right now, how can we say that it's more plausible for life somewhere else to come here?
Because the origin of life isn't relevant to this. Because I was talking about a scenario by which something which is alive travels to Earth by purely natural means. And by definition, if the number of times we have actually confirmed a supernatural explanation for something is zero, and the number of times we've confirmed natural explanations is greater than zero, then the natural explanations are by definition more plausible.
So you're trying to compare also the probability of you know, God doing something versus some sort of potentially naturalistic explanation of life. I hear this sort of thing a lot, and often there's embedded this idea that, well, God is more plausible, but how did God come to exist, and isn't God much more complicated than early life, and, you know, how does it appear magically, and what's the probability of its existence? And let's put some numbers on that before we make a comparison, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I'm not making the comparison. I'm just bringing up that I've heard the comparison that Matt has used in the past,
which I explained.
You did explain it, but you said we have more natural explanations, therefore it's more plausible that this is one of them.
No. Not just that we have more. Every explanation we've ever found has been natural and not supernatural. That's a trend you don't just get to throw out when it's inconvenient.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, that's basically inductive reasoning, right?
Right. So if I go to the dryer and I have done my laundry and I get in there and there's a pair of socks and they're actually both in there together. Now, if I go back at another time and there's a sock missing, would it ever be more plausible that sock-stealing fairies, which we've never shown to exist, are a more plausible explanation than any other natural explanation?
No, and that's a really good point.
And that's the entirety of my case for why alien abduction is more plausible than God. It doesn't appeal to anything supernatural. It is entirely naturalistic. It doesn't violate the laws of physics. It doesn't even need anything particularly special, just time.
Okay, I can accept that and move on. There's just one part of disagreement, but there's one thing.
Is it whether or not there's a God?
No.
Oh, so you agree with me there's not a God, or that you don't have any reason to believe there's a God?
Nope, not that one either.
Oh, okay.
Two things.
When you say anything is more plausible than a supernatural explanation, I get confused because, again, several, you know, conversations you had in the past, when some, you know, people have said something about the word supernatural, you have said, I don't even know what supernatural is. What is that? But when you use the comparison that alien abduction is more plausible than anything supernatural, what I'm hearing is you saying alien abduction is more plausible than supernatural when you yourself have no idea what supernatural even means.
Oh, that's easy. I know what I mean when I use the term supernatural. I don't know what they mean, because a lot of people use that term in a lot of different ways. I'm using it for saying that when I use it, I'm using it in a literal sense that we're talking about something that violates the laws of nature, that requires some sort of agency or power directed from outside of space and time. When other people, and actually it's not supernatural that I say I don't know what it means, it's spiritual that is the one that I say I have no idea what it means, because spiritual is used by so many different people.
Well, you have said that science doesn't know how to study the supernatural.
Right. Right. But if you can find a clip where I said I don't even know what the word supernatural means, I'll retract it, because and every time I've used that in the way that I think you're describing, I'm talking about the word spiritual.
Sure. You could very well be right.
But I also could have misspoken. I might have misspoken. You might have misheard. But now it's clear. I know what supernatural means. I certainly know what it means when I use it. I don't know what spiritual means, because it is used by so many people in so many different ways.
Well, and it would help here if we had any at all evidence of the supernatural. And we don't. And until we do, it's kind of almost pointless to talk about it.
Yeah, I did a video on my Atheist Debates project about why appeals to the supernatural can't and shouldn't be used. It's the same reason, in a sense, the courts decided that they're no longer going to allow spectral evidence because that's essentially appealing to the supernatural. If we had an event, and this gets back to the Tim Tebow guy who called earlier, but we'll do something slightly better than Tim Tebow. If I was at the Ren Fair yesterday and there were fortune tellers there and I was going to have my fortune told, except they wanted $20, and that's way too much, even if I was filming it to show the garbage in this. But if we observed a phenomenon that seems incredibly unlikely, that seems improbable, that some people might colloquially refer to as a miracle, if that phenomenon was such that somebody predicted something that would happen in the future, how do you know that this person who made this prediction, and it appears to have come true, had any tie to anything supernatural? How did you rule out the guest that got lucky? They made it the sort of prediction that was likely to come true anyway.
Orchestrated it.
The mere improbability does not have, there's no way to demonstrate that a supernatural explanation is necessary. And because we don't have anything supernatural we can point to, examine, or test, we can't demonstrate that it exists or that it can in fact impact our reality. And so you just don't get to appeal to the supernatural until somebody can demonstrate that something supernatural has occurred. Yeah, and I don't know how to do that.
And it's not much of an explanation because if it's magic, it explains everything,
yeah,
which means it explains nothing.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I agree with all that, guys.
You're so close to being right about everything then.
I'm getting closer.
All right.
Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure. Thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, as a reminder, after the show's over, any atheist or atheist friendly person's welcome to come down. We're going to be doing dinner and other stuff. I feel like I've like not only talked more than normal, but been like short with people more than normal. So who would you like to take next?
Oh my goodness. Let's take Jeroen, number 4.
Jeroen in Aruba. Jeroen. You're on with Don and Matt.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Jeroen, you're on.
Okay, not in Aruba, actually. Since Aruba was the only known island to hear a call screener, I'm from Curaçao, which is next to Aruba.
Oh, I know where Curaçao is.
I know of that, yeah.
So thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, he would have had a hard time spelling that, too, because it's got the squiggle.
Yes, yeah, the cedilla, that's right.
Yeah. I at least knew it was there. I didn't know what it was called. My apologies.
Let me do this as quickly as possible so you guys can go on to the next call. I recently had a chat, actually, with a conservative Catholic lady. And I'm an atheist. I don't set out to actually deconvert people. There are several reasons for that. First of all, lately we usually get either Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons here, not Catholics. And I don't know anything about the Jehovah's particular sect or Mormons, so I don't engage with them. The second reason is that I have recently been diagnosed with autism with some Asperger traits, so communication is not my strong suit. That's also a reason why I don't actually engage with people. But this lady, well, she was Catholic, and I'm culturally Catholic. When I was very, very young, I still believed in the Catholic version of God. So I invited her in, because, you know, she was proselytizing door to door. And, there was an additional reason why I invited her in. Sorry. It's because she said she had a very crazy reason for the existence of God, or evidence for the existence of God. And it was, I kid you not, in March 1966, the Beatles said they were more popular than Jesus. In November 1966, God sent Yoko Ono to destroy them.
So that's actually really good.
You're calling in to make a joke, you got a good one.
But all these, while the Beatles broke up all these years later, they're still more relevant than Oasis, who thought they were bigger than the Beatles.
Yeah. But anyway, so I invited her in, and it was actually a 3-hour conversation. I had nothing better to do that day. So basically, I had evidence again for all her assertions. She said we talked about gender identity, and I asked her whether she knew about complete androgen insensitivity syndrome, which means that a person with an X with XY chromosome can look outwardly indistinguishable from women. She did not know about that. And I also asked her to hit me with her best evidence for miracles. And like many Catholics, of course, she did the miracle of the sun at Fatima. And she asked me how it was possible that so many people saw the same thing. And I asked her, well, how do you know that you saw the same thing, that they saw the same thing? Because people tend to convince themselves or something, or they lie about having seen something to fit in.
And or they embellish the story later.
Yeah, and she asked me what my evidence was of that. And I said, well, I showed her, because we were at my house, grabbed my laptop, and I showed her actually a story about the ash conformity experiment, how people actually pretend to have seen something to fit in, or actually convince themselves that they saw it. And I kid you not, it was like the look in her eyes was like an error message on a computer screen. And she was quiet for about 10 minutes after that. And she thanked me for the conversation. She left. And well, a month later, I ran into her again. But it's odd. You know, it was not my intention. She went full nihilist. She was not doing well. And, you know, I can't say I'm sorry I had the conversation with her, but I do feel contrite, because she was obviously struggling with the new situation. I mean, I didn't expect to convince her, but yeah, in hindsight, she turned out to be very, very, open-minded. She listened to my evidence.
So you feel that you were successful in deconverting her?
She certainly doesn't believe in any gods anymore.
Okay.
And. Yeah, well,
I think one thing to talk about or think about is, what did she gain and what did she lose, right? She lost some delusions. She might have lost a community and her worldview that had been built up. But if it was kind of a false worldview, maybe it's not so bad that she had to sort of start over, you know, and build up some different blocks to come up with a different worldview. And, you know, you might be sympathetic to the fact that you may have caused this crisis in her life at a particular time, which may or may not have been, you know, that the best time for her or whatever. But I think that at the end of the day, she's going to be better off.
But one of the things is, yes, you had a conversation with her where you were open and honest. And what's happening to her now is not because of you. What's happening to her now is because of the religion that she was taught. It was basically, this religion has lavished all sorts of ideas on her, and she's built up a worldview around it. And then when she finds out it's not true, it's the religion that set her up for this damage, not you. Now, if you have the opportunity to continue interacting with her, there are resources that you can point her to, not just recoveringfromreligion.org, but there may be other I don't know if there are secular organizations in Curaçao or not.
Not many.
But there are certainly, if she has internet access, there are resources through Recovering from Religion as well. But what needs to happen is that, yeah, while a lot of, there are many atheists who initially fall into nihilism, and some of them stay there or seemingly stay there for ages, having your worldview smashed is not a trivial thing, and it impacts some people more than others, and she needs some resources and help. And so if you run into her and see her again, if talk to her about how she's doing, and if she's not doing particularly well, offer her those resources and let her know that she's not alone, and that there are many people who had those beliefs. Basically, religion keeps building you up and building you up and building you up, and then when somebody knocks it out, it'd be like if you were one of those terrible singers that auditioned on American Idol, but everybody in your family had kept telling you you were this wonderful singer, and then you wind up being mocked in front of a nation because you're actually terrible. It's, yeah, the mockery is mean. I'm not excusing the mockery, but if somebody just flatly said, you are not in fact a good singer, the damage that was done by, in that awakening is the responsibility of all those people who falsely built you up the entire time. And once you realize, you know, I'm not a good singer, then you're going to stop doing that, but it doesn't have to, you know, completely destroy your world.
Right.
I understand. No, the thing is, looking at, because I've been watching the Atheist Experience for a while, I guess all the intractable people that you, I mean, there are people who say that atheists experience turn an atheist, but there are also many, many intractable people, you know, so I didn't actually expect to be successful, let alone cause a crisis, because, you know, we all have biases, even I have biases. Okay.
Yep. And if we knew the magic words to deconvert people, we'd be uttering them all the time.
Yeah.
We don't generally know those things.
It's different for everybody. I mean, people believe for different reasons, they're going to give it up for different reasons.
Because when I was talking to her about the Fatima thing, I said, well, the people went to Fatima fully expecting to see a miracle. That expectation created a bias. And I told her, I don't think they're crazy or dumb for having that bias. I told her an anecdote about myself that everybody has biases. For example, we were having a beach barbecue 7 years ago, and we ran out of ice cubes. I had to go buy them. But my father told me not to buy from Chinese mini-marts because there was a health scare. Because the Chinese, apparently, they didn't pay attention to health or safety codes. So we said, find the local ones. So I was driving around, and most of the mini marts nowadays have been taken over by the Chinese on this island. And at some point, I stopped at a mini mart called Toko Kufe. And I said, oh, Kufe? Oh, dear, another Chinese one. But I saw an Afro-Curacaoan lady stand in there. So I got out of my car and asked her, well, what's a lady like you working, doing in a Chinese mini mart? And she said, well, Chinese mini mart? It's not a Chinese mini market, it's Toko Kufe. And Kufe means with faith. So I basically, I had so much China on the mind that I saw something in my own paternal language as Chinese.
Yep, we do that all the time. Well, I would encourage you to go on to your next victim.
anyway, thanks. I feel much better. I still feel very bad about causing the crisis, but I suppose it was out of my hands. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Take care. No, it sounds like you actually had a very sensible and nice conversation, and she just
The things we should
took it to heart, which is awesome.
We should feel bad about intentionally, maliciously mistreating people. You should never feel bad about honestly expressing what you believe, especially if you're doing it from a point of view of, you know, I care about somebody else. I want to have a conversation. There are people, a very good friend of mine made a post about how a lot of times people will offer their opinion when it's completely unwanted, and that's just crap and you shouldn't do that. And I would agree that that's true if the person you're offering it to is the type of person who you know doesn't want it or wouldn't appreciate it. And it would also be true for people who are like opinion mongers. Mm-hmm. Like, let me jump in here and do this. But if there's somebody who cares about somebody else and they see them struggling with something that they know the fix for or they've been through, offering their opinion and those types of things, that's just compassion. And, you know, you shouldn't, not only should you not be putting people down for compassion, but, you know, you shouldn't feel bad for being compassionate or honest. I mean, there are people who are going to look at today's show and go, God, Matt was a jackass to four callers. And then there are other people who are going to look at it and say, oh, Matt wasn't a jackass to four callers. Matt wanted to make sure that we got onto real arguments and real shows and cared more about what listeners or people who were going to make sensible, reasonable arguments or what they thought were sensible and reasonable arguments. And you can see it both ways. And either of them could be right. I have intentionally been a jackass on occasion. Like, I'm going to taunt Kanye. And that's really me poking, because I don't think I'm ever going to hear from him, because I think he's too scared to come debate an actual atheist. Yeah.
Talk smack, man.
But it's reasonable to look at things both ways. But if you know that you sat down and you had a conversation with somebody and all you did was openly express, you know, kindly what you thought and answered somebody's questions, if that ultimately resulted in them being sad or worse off, you have to look at the other aspect of this. Why did it make them sad? And that's why I bring up the fact that it was religion that set them up for the fall. Just like the people who, you know, people will, oh, let me get my Christian friend to call in. That's like saying, hey, you should go on American Idol.
Right.
And I'm just, yeah, we had that kid, I'm the Simon Cowell. Got
to get his mother to call in, and she didn't quite know what she was in for.
I had a conversation, and I talked about that afterwards. I had a conversation with that guy. He was not trying to set his mom up.
Okay.
He had just become incredibly frustrated with their conversation, and he knew he couldn't do anymore, and he thought could.
I see.
And after that conversation, I apologized because he wasn't doing what I thought he was. It's just that his mom's arguments were so bad and she's so confused that sometimes it comes off as a parody. It's Poe's law that you can't parody a belief because somebody out there actually believes it.
Yep.
We have Canadian Catholic from Canada on with Don and Matt. How are you?
Hey, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. I'm honored to be on the show.
What should I call you for short? Because Canadian Catholic from Canada isn't going to fly.
You can just call me Canadian or Catholic or whatever. You know, that's fine too for me.
Okay.
You can just check. Okay.
Okay.
So either way, I just wanted to discuss my, basically, I was not raised Catholic. I was more of a fundamentalist Christian, and then I deconverted. Mm-hmm. And I became a full-blown inner circle atheist. I was one for about a year. Okay.
Well, I don't know what an inner circle atheist
is.
Yeah,
boy, I need to join this.
Yeah, well, so basically I was using all the arguments I hear from you. I was a full-fledged atheist. Okay, I was into it. I was into skepticism, everything.
Okay, so you can tell me that, but I'd much rather you say, why were you an atheist?
Because I just realized that when I was a fundamentalist, my views kind of, I had bad arguments, so my views did not comport to reality. I just realized and became... And I just started to say I lack belief in God.
Okay, so now you're a Catholic, which I would assume if somebody tells me they were an atheist because they didn't have good arguments for God, and now they're a Catholic, that must mean that they have good arguments for Catholicism.
Yes, I will just make a point real quick and say that I realized ultimately it was a journey that the skepticism I was applying to fundamentalism and other positions, I was not applying to my own as an atheist. And I believe you...
To your own what as an atheist?
I'll just make a point. To my positions as an atheist, I was not applying it.
But that... No. See, okay, here's a problem. I am an atheist because I'm a skeptic. Because when I look at the claims for religions, I find that they don't have good arguments and...
Let me make a better point. Just give me 30 seconds to make a point. Atheists like me, for example, and you, we say that we lack belief in God. I used to say that. I no longer say that. I'm a very devout Catholic. I'm a papist, Romanist, everything. But I used to like say that I lack belief in God. And this is not a claim. This is just, you know. But then I realized that to be an atheist, you have to claim at least that to lack belief in God is a logical position with all the evidence we have. And I no longer believe that. Does that make sense?
So you have some evidence, is what you're saying.
What I'm saying is I'm an atheist because I'm a skeptic, because the religious claims, the claims for God, mm-hmm. have not met their burden of proof, don't have sufficient evidence to warrant belief. And you're saying that you were an atheist in that you claimed to lack a belief in a God,
uh-huh.
and yeah. you think that lacking a belief in God is not... So basically, instead of proving that there is a God, you became convinced that you couldn't lack belief in God.
I became convinced that given the evidence, atheism, lack of belief in God, is no longer something rational to hold.
Okay, what is the evidence?
Well, I like to say that it's a preponderance of evidence. There is not really one piece. Okay.
You know that 100 million half-baked pieces of crap don't add up to anything, right?
I've heard that same dismissal again and misrepresentation, but what I'm trying to say...
It's not a misrepresentation. What's your best argument and evidence for the existence of God? Because if your best doesn't get us any closer, then a whole bunch of inferior ones aren't going to help.
Matt, just a second, with all due respect, you define evidence in a very constrained way, right?
Yes, I defined evidence in such a way that it is consistent with reality, that it is the sort of thing that people should rely on to make decisions. If you broaden evidence to the point where somebody said something, or this feels right, or we don't have a better explanation for this, that's not evidence. Those are all fallacies.
Sure, but what I'm trying to say is that there's different categories of evidence. You could have scientific evidence, you could have historical evidence, you can have preponderance of evidence. So
I understand that there are different categories of evidence. My position is there sufficient evidence to believe that a God exists?
I would say yes.
Then what is it?
So there is different lines we could pursue. Just pick one
to start with. Rather than trying to give me a primer on epistemology.
Okay, I would all go with, for example, an argument from contingency.
I have an entire video responding to the argument of contingency.
Misrepresenting it.
Goodbye. If you are the type of person who thinks that the video I put up responding to the argument from contingency misrepresents it, then you can reply to me individually. You can email sans.deity@gmail.com or president@atheist-community.com, or you can email the Atheist Debates thing correctly. But I'm not going to let you sit here and just pretend that you are now in a rational position by claiming that I'm misrepresenting the argument from contingency. That shit's not going to fly, ever. If you think I've made a mistake, then instead of calling in to say, I used to be an atheist, now I'm a Catholic because of the preponderance of evidence, what you should have done is called in to say, I think there's an error in your video about the argument from contingency. In which case, I would say, I would need to review that video on the argument from contingency. What is the error? And let's look at it. So you're free to email. But if you're just going to come in here and flat out assert that I needed your lecture on epistemology or that I misrepresented contingency, the notion that you are now a believer because you think the lack of belief position isn't warranted by the preponderance of evidence and that you weren't applying your skepticism properly just means you don't understand skepticism. Because the fundamental truth here is very simple. There are many different God claims. And while each one of them might have some anecdotal evidence for it or historical evidence for it, that is evidence that is consistent with the claim and not evidence that necessarily reaches support of that claim. It's like saying, hey, we found this ancient city and it bears a striking resemblance to what we would expect to find if we were to find the ruins of Sodom and Gomorrah. We found on this mountain over here some things that were a little bit reminiscent of what might have been Noah's Ark. That is evidence that is consistent with the claim, but not necessarily tied to the claim, and certainly not sufficient to warrant accepting the claim. Meanwhile, if the God of Catholicism exists, that God can easily demonstrate its existence, it should be without question that such a God exists. And by the way, the Catholic religion is basically organized fucking crime that is absolutely disgusting. Now, are you better on evolution than the Baptists are? You bet. Are you better with science now than the Baptists are? You bet. But you weren't when you threw Galileo in jail, and none of those religions were when we started burning witches. And you're not only making excuses for the same book that other people believe in, but as a Catholic, I guess I could have left him on to find out if he buys into this notion of transubstantiation so that when we're eating the Eucharist, do we have to worry about whether we got a toenail or foreskin as that part of Jesus that we're actually eating. But don't pretend that all of this comes together in a package that makes disbelief irrational. That is the foundation of what he was essentially saying, that disbelief is irrational. And it's
I
not.
I think he was saying that he came across evidence that convinced him. I think that's what he was trying to say.
He specifically said that the lack of belief claim is unskeptical and irrational. And what he's arguing is that there's sufficient evidence that nobody should be able to say, I just lack belief for lack of evidence. And that is basically a claim that you're just too skeptical. And that means you don't understand skepticism because you can't be too skeptical. Skeptics want to believe as many true things and as few false things as possible. They want to make sure that their degree of belief is proportional to the evidence that supports it. And I would say that there is not a strong, devout, Romanist Catholic on the planet that came to that position via skepticism. If there were, we would have published articles demonstrating the truth of the Roman Catholic claims. This would be Nobel Prize worthy. It would be Templeton Prize worthy. It would be all over the place. And not just somebody who calls in to say, once upon a time I was a skeptic and you were dishonest about the argument from contingency. Go fuck yourself.
I thought for sure we were going to go to the miracles. I thought miracles were going to be his preponderance of evidence.
The argument from contingency, by the way, I'm not going to go through it all here. You can go watch the video. But much in the same way the Kalam doesn't actually get to a God, contingency is essentially circular in the sense that the thing we're trying to prove, you're just arguing, is these things are in a category that are contingent on others, and God is in a category that's not. So you're kind of defining it that way. But anyway, we have Eddie in New York. You are on with Don and Matt. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, what's up?
Am I speaking to Don and Matt?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Because I'm watching the YouTube version.
Yeah, yes. You're going to want to mute it because that's coming to you on a delay. And if you pay any attention to that, you won't be able to pay attention to us on the phone.
All right. Go ahead.
What have you got for us today? You called us.
I'm a believer who has doubts.
Okay. That's probably a healthy thing. Asking questions is a good thing.
And I'm kind of sick and tired and disgusted what I was raised to believe in. And a lot of people, a lot of believers don't do behave in peace, love, and concern and morality.
There, you know, hypocrisy is a big problem. You know, I would say that, you know, atheism, you know, is really just a claim about, you know, or lack of claim about a belief in gods. We don't necessarily have a way to behave, a moral code, these sorts of things. There's humanism that does, you know, add some of that. But, you know, it seems like since religion is trying to do all things for all people, it's not at all surprising that people wouldn't measure up to the ideals, right?
You know what I got disgusted with it, looking at all these believers, is over 40 years, what the hell was I following?
Well, I will say this, and I've already had to put my Christian hat on once with an atheist caller, so I'll throw it back on again. The fact that there are hypocritical Christians or Christians who don't follow the teachings or who follow a specific version of the teachings that you find morally repugnant is completely independent from whether or not there's a God. It's entirely possible that there could be a God and even the Abrahamic God. And yet the fact that there are terrible believers has no bearing on that. Just like there's plenty of atheists who have bad arguments or bad reasons for why they were an atheist. And that doesn't have any bearing on whether or not there's a God. So I just want to make sure we keep those separate, because in the same way that I don't want anybody to believe that there is a God for bad reasons, I would not want people to not be convinced that there's a God for bad reasons.
I'm going to give you a good point. I was raised with family values and morality. It's a good foundation.
Yeah, but I don't know what that is. I mean, I know what some people mean by it, but you were raised with family values and morality. You'd have to be a little bit more specific.
And what I'm trying to say is, I got a Catholic Christian family who is ungodly and immoral.
Okay, but my parents would say that I am ungodly and immoral, and I agree with them, I'm ungodly. But they have a view of morality that is fundamentally different from mine. You know, if the Bible says, you know, if a man lies with another man as he lies with a woman, they're committing an abomination or deserving of death, that's a moral declaration against male-male homosexuality. And yet I don't think that that is immoral at all. And so, and I was raised with a moral system that would have denounced Don's relationships, and now I don't think that. So pointing to somebody and saying they're not acting in a way that's consistent with my morality is completely independent from the God question.
Have you thought about what your morality is, and can you express it? Maybe not necessarily in this call, but can you kind of have you thought about it enough where you can kind of put it in a box?
Let me put it this way.
Okay.
I have a Catholic Christian family where I took care of my parents. I inherited a house, and they're not being Christian, they're not being godly, they're not being moral. They don't give a shit.
About what? I'm confused. They don't give a shit about what?
They don't give a shit if I live or die.
The rest of your family. Eddie?
And I'm listening to this stuff on YouTube right now.
Yeah, you shouldn't be doing that.
Just mute that. Turn it off. Watch it tomorrow.
Are you Matt?
Yes. Eddie?
Yeah.
So, Eddie, my advice to you is don't worry too much about what your family says, and follow your own grammar.
Matt, I understand what you're going through with your family, what I'm going through with my family, but we can't change people.
Well, actually, people can change. And I'm not going through with my family what you are, because my parents do care whether I'm alive or not. I'm trying to understand what your situation is, Eddie, and I'm not quite sure I'm clear on it.
So what I'm trying to say is, I know we talk about morality and between believers, unbelievers.
I can still hear the YouTube, Eddie.
Sorry about that. What I'm trying to say is I'm sorry for Matt, and I'm sorry for me.
Okay. I'm doing okay.
What I'm trying to point out is I know you don't believe.
Yeah.
I don't. I have doubts, and I don't want to believe in this shit anymore, because religion, God, heaven or hell, judgment or punishment is all bullshit.
Well, it sounds like you're a non-believer.
It sounds like you ought to maybe reach out to a local atheist community and make some friends, even if it's an online forum, because I think it would help you at this stage of your life to talk this out with some other folks that have been through it, especially recently.
Yeah. And we'd also recommend...
And what I'm trying to express is, Matt, I'm a friend of yours. I'm a friend of Don. I love you guys.
Thank you.
I really love you guys, because you have a different viewpoint, where a lot of people are closed-minded, ignorant, naive.
Yeah.
And
although I'll also point out, it's not always their fault.
And there's a lot of religious people who hurt and harm people, don't know what the fuck morality is,
yep.
Don't know what the fuck hurt and harm is. You know, they don't repent and confess. There's a lot of believers who even don't follow what they believe.
Yep.
And they don't give a shit what's in their fucking book.
Yep.
You know, there's a good line in the book. There's a good line. It says, you know, Jesus says, if you turn against your family, I don't want to know you.
Well, Jesus also holds the exact opposite position when the disciples come to tell him that his family is there, and he's like, what have those people to do with me? This is my family. As Don has pointed out, it's the big book of multiple choice. We're running short on time, Eddie. I would recommend, and I appreciate you calling in to tell us, you know, a little bit about what you're going through, and I'm sorry that you are. I recommend you contact Recovering From Religion. They have both the hotline and online resources. You don't have to be a non-believer. It exists.
I just want to tell you one thing. Okay. I'm sorry. Sorry when you have to deal with religious people.
I like it.
that's what we're here for, man.
I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry.
I appreciate that, Eddie, but
I just want to get one message across.
Okay.
You can't open somebody's mind when they're closed-minded, ignorant, and naive.
Yes, you fucking can. And while I appreciate your sentiment and your empathy and your compassion and the fact that you love us, you're not the one who can apologize to me for what other people have done. Plus, I enjoy it. And we on this show have, over years, reached thousands of people who somebody else might consider closed-minded, and they might have been closed-minded. People are not quite as rigid as we think they are. And while there are some people who will never change their mind, I don't know how to tell...
I just want to leave one message. Play a song called Tom Jones. I think he used to be a believer. He was Catholic. There's a song called Tom Jones, Burn in Hell. If you listen to the song and you listen to the lyrics, you will understand what I'm trying to get at.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Eddie.
Thanks for your call, Eddie.
We'll listen to it.
We're going to move on.
I want to try and get one more call in, and so my apologies to the people who don't get through, but I'm going to do one more call, and then we're going to call it quits, and we'll hop on the Discord for a little bit. But we got Rick in Canada. Oh, now we've got Rick in Canada. How are you?
Hey, how are you doing?
Hi, let's make it quick, if we can.
It says here that you have proof that the Big Bang Theory is in the Bible and that science comes from the Bible. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you think you found something about the Big Bang in the Bible, because the second part of your sentence, that science comes from the Bible, is wrong. Science comes from investigation of evidence and thought. It doesn't come from the Bible.
I agree. So, have you ever heard of the star in the bottle? It's on YouTube. It's a scientific testing. Have you ever heard of that?
I don't know.
I suggest it. Now, it's called star in a bottle.
Okay.
Now, and it's been conducted many times. Now, what it is in a jar of bottle of water, by using a high-frequency sound wave, they were able to mimic an explosion on a mild, minor scale. And what it actually does is just like the Big Bang. Now, there's no...
What the hell's that have to do?
Is this cavitation?
What's that?
Is this cavitation?
I don't know if it's cavitation, but it's a scientific experiment.
Okay, well, what difference does it make?
Sorry to be sciencey on you.
So if your point is that the Big Bang is in the Bible, there are plenty of things that are in the Bible, and some of them are interpreted after we find out through science, and then you go back and they say, oh, it's here. But the way we know that it's true is through science, not through any holy book.
Yeah, I agree. So if the whole
So what's the point?
If we can prove this on a minor scale...
Prove what on a minor scale?
Exactly.
There's absolutely nothing that sound waves can do in a bottle of water that could prove the Big Bang model.
It's creating a heat source that's a self-sustaining heat source that's driven solely on high pitch.
Perpetual motion.
It sustains itself and it doesn't go out.
That's a load of shit, and I don't even have to look it up, because what you're describing...
You're not looking it up, so you don't know that, right?
I know, because I know about science. Just like if you said, we found a perpetual motion machine, which is what you're describing, I know that's bullshit.
Well, then if you know it's bullshit, then suggest that every one of your viewers goes and looks it up, because they're all seeing
okay.
It is possible.
By all means.
I would suggest any of my... Shut up. I would suggest that any of the viewers who want to waste some time, go look this up.
Proving the Bible.
How does this prove the Bible?
Because the Bible says that there was water originally. The Bible says it was sound waves. God spoke.
No, it doesn't say there was water originally.
Okay.
It doesn't say there was water originally. God created water.
It says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth was without form, void, and darkness, upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, let there be light.
Right. And
let's say there was water.
And so let's say we do something with a bottle of water. How does that prove the Bible?
Well, it's a minor scientific testing. That's how science works. You do minor scales.
It doesn't prove the Bible.
It doesn't have anything to do with the Bible.
If we go in and we start examining snakes, this is like saying that when we slice open a snake and we find the remnant hind legs from its ancient ancestors, that this proves that snakes had legs, which proves that God cursed them to walk on their belly.
Damn right.
What a waste of time. This is what I'm talking about when you say, this is the evidence. Hey, this is consistent with my completely outlandish thing, and therefore it proves it. That's not the way proof works. That's not the way science works. See, you would need, if you want to talk about what actually happened at the beginning of the earth, you don't just say, oh, my book says the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and then yell into a glass and say, see, it rippled, therefore we've proved Genesis. Shit just doesn't work that way.
Let's go kill some
Chinese. On that note, we're gonna have Chinese food out there. Thank you to everybody who tuned in today and watched, the people on that side of the glass who are our guests, the people on that side of the wall who make this show happen. And we will see you all next week, and we'll be on the Discord server in just a moment.